Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Bet Amun Aleph, 11 lines down. Gemara here is continuing its discussion with regards to competition and what is considered to be fair practices or unfair practices in competition. The basic principle that the Gemara has laid out for us so far has been that if individuals come from outside of the area or outside of the city, they don't have a right to come and usurp the customers or the business that is to be had in the local area. On the other hand, local merchants, someone who lives in the city, can compete with other members of the city for the business of the city. So that's the basic principle, which is that if you are local, you have all rights to compete with other local merchants. On the other hand, if you're coming from outside of the city, then you can't come and take away or usurp the business that is there for the locals to take. So now the Gemara has a case. Hani Dikulai. Rashi claims that these are basket makers, although he does bring an alternative that they were sellers of pots or cauldrons. The Aitu Dikulai, the Bavel. They brought their wares to Bavel in order to sell them. Adu Bnei Mato, Kamak Ve'ilavayu. The people of the city wanted to block them from coming and selling in here. They thought it was unfair practices or unfair competition, because they were coming from the outside now and they were going to take away the business of the local merchants. Atu the Kameh de Ravina. So they came before Ravina to adjudicate the case. They come from outside the city and therefore they will sell to people outside of the city. In essence, what he was saying is that this is a large city. And since this large city, people who come to purchase in the city are not only members of the city, but also people from outside of the city. Therefore, it's also fair that merchants from outside of the city come and sell within the city. This isn't a hermetically sealed economy by which people only purchase within the city and only sell within the city. No, you have customers coming from outside of the city. And just like you, the local merchants are the beneficiaries of these customers coming from outside the city, so too, merchants from outside of the city can come and compete for that business. Behani mile biyoma deshuka. That is only true on the day of the shuk, because that is the day by which people come to the city from surrounding areas in order to purchase and buy things. That means that it's not just the members of the city that are creating the business or that are the customers. Aval below yom of the shuk alo. And if it's not the day of the shuk, then they have no right to do this, because then they're really competing just for the business of the city, which they don't have an entitlement to. Ubi yom of the shuk namalo aminan el lizvune bishuk. In addition, on the day of the shuk, they only have a right to sell their wares in the shuk itself. Aval adure lo. But to walk around the city, meaning to be an iterant salesman within the city, that they don't have a right to do, because then again, they're competing for the local business, not for the general business of the shuk. So the shuk, which is an area of public selling, public in the sense that it's not just customers from the city, therefore also merchants who aren't from the city have a right to set up shop there and to sell. On the other hand, when it comes to the business of the city, which either means on days that it's not the shuk, or it means going around the city and trying to sell within the city, those are not permitted except for the local merchants, because then you're competing for business that belongs to the local economy. Hanu amurai da'aiti amra pumnaro. These individuals who were sellers of wool brought their wool to the pumnaro, the mouth of the river, or that's the name of the city or the location within the city. Again, the people of the city wanted to block them from coming and selling over here. They thought that this was a local economy, and now these outsiders were bringing in merchandise and they were going to hurt the business of the local merchants. Atu the Kameh de Rav Kahana. I came before Rav Kahana to adjudicate the case. Amalu, dinu d'mak ve'alaihu. You have a right to stop them. These individuals are trying to usurp the customers of the business of the local economy. They don't have a right to do that. Amru lei, itnan ashrai. The sellers of wool say, we have outstanding credit in this city. People in the city have purchased items from us and not paid for it, and therefore we have credit outstanding. We want to collect the monies outstanding, the credit that we've extended to the city. So now we need to stay in the city until those people are able to repay us. While we're staying in the city, we need to be able to pay for our living expenses. We need to be able to live while we're waiting to get the monies paid back. You have a right to stay and open up shop and sell. Sell to the point that it will provide you the expenses or living expenses that you need. But once they have paid you back the credit or outstanding credit that you extended, then you need to leave. So basically, he allowed them to set up shop until they get repaid their credit, and then they have to leave town. Again, here, the narrowing of the scope to only chiyutaihu means exactly their living expenses. We aren't so makbid on that, the Mishonim, or the Ramban, and others mentioned over here, because of the fact that if we only let them take their living expenses, they're never going to be able to get out of here. because they're not going to be able to then pay for their way out. You have to give them the ability to live and a little beyond their living. But what we're saying is that they can't open up shop and create a permanent location over here. They can stay while they necessary to stay here. But once they've completed whatever they need from here, which is collection of their credit, then they need to leave town. Rav Dimi Minarda, IT Gugurot Bisvina. So Rav Dimi Minarda, one of the big Chachamim in the 4th, 5th generation Amoraim of Bavel, he was obviously a merchant, and he had purchased these dried figs that he was bringing in a boat. Amalei Reish Galutu L'Rova. So the Reish Galutu says to Rova, Pok Chazi Eat Super Mirabonan Hu. Go check if he is a young Talmud Chacham. Naki Leishukka. And if he is a young Talmud Chacham, then we'll open up a Shuk. If you remember from the Gemara and Baba Metzia, we spoke over there about the fact that young Talmidei Chachamim, when they came to the city, especially if they were associated with the Reish Galuta, were given special market rights, which is that they were given a ability to sell out all their merchandise before any of the other merchants could sell in the city. This was a benefit garnered by the Talmidei Chachamim, especially if they were associated again with the Reish Galuta, and they got a waiver from taxation because of that, or they got the waiver in the form of they were allowed to sell out before anybody else. That was in order to facilitate their ability to learn Torah, but still make a living, and not spend their whole day competing for the business. So over here, they're asking, is Rav Dimi Minarda qualified as a Talmid Chacham that can have that right or that zchut of being given a private shuk or a private showing so that he can sell out his merchandise first? I'm like, Rava the Adar Bahava. So Rava says to his Talmid Mufak, Rav Adar Bahava, Pok Tohile Bekankane. Go out and sniff his barrel. It's a terminology that's borrowed from wine, which is that when you sniff the barrel, you're checking whether it's still wine or it's turned into vinegar. So he says to him, go out and smell and see what the content of Rav Dimi Minarda is. Let's figure out if he is really a Talmid Chacham. Nofak Azal. So he went out to greet him. Bamine. He asked him a shayla, a halachic question, to test his tradition in Torah. Pil shebalak fifa mitzrit. An elephant that swallowed an Egyptian basket. Rashi interprets kfifa mitzrit to mean made out of reeds. On the other hand, the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it over here, he says, Mitzrit is from Mitzure Dekel, from the leaves of the palm tree. So this is similar to the Dikulai then above, who were making these baskets out of palm leaves. V'ikia derech beit arei. And afterwards, he defecated it, and it came out. Mahu, what is the din with regards to this basket? Now, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, this is actually an issue that is raised in the Gemara in Menachot. Over there, the Gemara in Menachot says that, well, what exactly is this scenario? The simplest way to try to understand the scenario is to say that the elephant swallowed a basket that was tamei, and then it defecated it. And we want to know now, since it went through the digestive tract of the elephant, is that enough to take away the din tumah from the basket? There, the Gemara says that that is straightforward, and it's not even a question. That is still tamei when it comes out, because we have a din with regards to kelim, that kelim are yoreid the tumah, meaning that they can accept tumah, or they can become muksha the kabel tumah, simply with machshava. But in order to remove any form of tumah, or their shame kli from them, they need a maaseh, they need an action. And over here, you have no maaseh to the kli. Nothing's changed about the kli when it comes out the other end of the elephant, and therefore it would remain tamei. So the Gemara there then goes on to explain that the nature of the question is, a case where the elephant either swallowed reeds, according to Rashi, or swallowed palm leaves, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom. And then while it was being digested in its stomach, when those items went through the digestive system of the elephant, and were not really digested, but really compacted together, and then when it came out with the excrement of the elephant, it was now shaped into a basket of sorts. Is that basket a din of kli eitz, or does that basket have a din of kli glalim? And the question is, with regards to kelim, we have certain kelim that are permanently tahor, because they're not from materials that are mekabel tumah. For instance, stone is one of those items. The other one is glalim, is excrement or dung. If you make kelim from that, then they don't have a din of tumah, they never mekabel tumah. On the other hand, items that are made from eitzim or other plant life, once they're made into a kli, they have a din of kli eitz, and they can be mekabel tumah. So the Gemara's question over there was, does the basket that comes through the excrement of the elephant, does it have a din of kli eitz, or does it have a din of kli glalim? And the Gemara there leaves it as unresolved issue. So Tosafot over here says, what exactly was Rav Adar Bahava expecting from Rav Dimi Minarda? The question in the Gemara Minachot is left unresolved. So he's asking him a question to which there is no answer. And the fact now that Lo Havayoyode, he didn't know the answer to the question, is not surprising, because there is no answer to the question. The Rabbeinu Tam over here suggests that Rav Adar Rava was not expecting an answer from him, because there is no conclusive answer, but rather he was expecting him to go through the Shakla Tarya, just like the Gemara in Menachot weighs the two sides or the two options with regards to what the outcome should be over here. So he expected Rav Nimi Daradah to do the same thing, and he didn't. Others, like the Yad Ramo over here, suggest that the question was the original question in the Gemara Menachot, which is the simple form of the question, which is akin to the Mishnah in Tarot. And there is an answer to that question. If you expect an answer from him about that issue. And we know already that with regards to the knowledge of Talmidei Chachamim, many Talmidei Chachamim were only versed in the Masechtot that were practical. There were numerous Amoraim that were not familiar with the Masechtot, that were not necessarily relevant to them. Starim, that were not relevant to them, whether it was Seder Tarot, Seder Kodashim, or maybe even Seder Zraim, they were not familiar with them, and therefore Rav Dimi Ben Hardah just doesn't know the answer. So Amale, Rav Dimi Ben Hardah says to Rav Abba, Marni Urova? Are you Rova? Meaning Rova, the great Rova that I heard about, are you Rova? Tofach Le Besandale. So as Rabbeinu Gershom points out over here, Rav Adar Bar Abba tapped Rav Dimi Ben Hardah on his sandal, or you could say that Rav Adar Bar Abba tapped with his sandal on Rav Dimi Ben Hardah was an action or a method that was considered to be a zilzul towards Rav Dimi Ben Hardah. I'm like, hey, ben didi the Rava ikatuva. Between me and Rava, there's a big gap. So Rav Dimi Ben Hardah was struck by the question that he had asked and thinking that he was a great Talmud Chacham, and that's why he thought he might be Rava. And Rav Adar Bar Abba says, no, I'm not Rava, and there's a big gap between me and Rava. Miu, al korchach anarabich. Nevertheless, now that we have determined that you're unable to answer this question that I'm posing, that I am your Rebbe, V'rova Rabba de Rabich, and Rava is the Rebbe of your Rebbe. Or in essence, Rava is your grand Rebbe now. No Naktulei Shuka. After Rav Adar Bar Abba came back and reported that he was in such a great Talmud Chacham, they didn't open up a shuk, they didn't give him special selling rights in the city. Pasid Grugoroti Day. He lost all of his merchandise, it went rotten, and he was unable to sell it. Ata the Kamei de Rav Yosef. So he goes to Rav Yosef to complain about the situation. Amalei Chazimar May Abduli says, did you see what they did to me? So Rav Yosef and Rabba were the older generation then. The younger generation is Rava and Rav Dimi Ben Hardah. And here we see Rav Adar Bar Abba, who's also a Talmid of Rava, was also a part of that younger generation that was there. So Rav Dimi Ben Hardah goes to complain to Rav Yosef about the behavior or how they treated him here. The one who did not let tarry the offense that was suffered by the king of Edom, he will also not let your ona'ah, the oppression that you have suffered, or the difficulty that you have suffered, the embarrassment you have suffered, he won't let that tarry. Because the pasuk says in Amos, that they sinned three times, but on the fourth one, I'm not going to forgive. That they burnt up the bones of Melech Edom and made them into lime. So over here, they were enemies. It's not surprising that he burnt Melech Edom. What it seems like is that not only did they burn the bones, but then they did something that was completely denigrating and unacceptable to the bones of the Melech Edom, which is they made them into seed. And that wasn't necessary. It's one thing if they wanted to rid themselves of an enemy or the enemy king, but to treat him in such a manner was considered unacceptable. And Hashem says that he won't forgive Moab for what they did over here. There are those that associate this with the story in the beginning of Melechim Bet with the Melech Yehoram of Israel and Melech Yehoshaphat of Judah, who team up with Melech Edom to go attack Mesha Melech Moab. And then in that story, the Melech Moab sacrifices his son on the wall, and it's an ambiguous statement over there as to who he actually sacrifices on the wall, and many say it's the son of Melech Edom, and they associate the story there of the burning of the son on the wall of Melech Edom to what is mentioned here in Amos. Nach nafshei de Rav Adar Bar Abba. Rav Adar Bar Abba passed away at a seemingly young age. Rav Yosef Amar, Ana Aneshinte. I was the cause of his death. I caused him to be punished. Da'ana latayate, because I cursed him. Now, we're going to have a list of all the Amoraim that interacted with the Rav Adar Bar Abba, And they're all going to say that they were the cause of his death. Now, in terms of saying that they were the cause of the death, they're not seeking bragging rights here as to who actually caused his death, but rather, as the Balei Tosfot point out over here, they were worried or regretful the fact that they caused his death, because we know, we saw this actually in the Gemara in Baba Metzi as well, Tosfot quotes it from the Gemara in Shabbat, that when an individual is the cause for a punishment of someone, then they themselves are taken to din. And so all these Amoraim were worried that it was because of them that precipitated the death of Rabbi Adam Bahava, and they will be held accountable for his death. And therefore they were, in a sense, regretful of what they had done, or worried about the fact that Rabbi Adam Bahava passed away. And that's what Rabbi Yosef says over here. I was the cause of his death because I cursed him. Rabbi Dimi Narda, Marana Nishtatei, the Afsi Guroti Day. Dimi Narda says, I was the cause of his death because I lost all this money because of him, and I was upset about the money that I had lost, and therefore he was punished for causing me that pain, or onah, that loss from what happened. From these two statements, you see that the Gemara feels that Rav Adar Bahava's reaction to Rav Dimi and Darda was incorrect or improper. He treated him in a way that was degrading when he was unable to answer the question. And so clearly the Gemara sees that as part of what precipitated his early demise was the fact that he treated Rabbi Dimi Minarda improperly. And now you see Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Dimi Minarda saying that he died or passed away because of us. Now, not saying that they were incorrect or that they were wrong in their assessment of the situation, just they realized that he really was punished severely for what had happened. And they don't want to be responsible for that death of him, even though they felt that he was unjustified in the way that he had treated Rav Dimi Narda. Vayamar ana anishatei. Vay says, I was responsible for his death. Damar lu Rabbonon, because Rav Adar Bahava used to tell the Rabbonon, he was a good marketer, and he was marketing for his Rebbe Amuvok Rova. Ada migramitu garme beabaye. Instead of going and chewing on bones in the Beit Midrash of Abaye, tu achlu bisra shmeina beirova. Come and eat from the fatty meats by Rova. In essence, he was saying, better off to come and learn by Rova than to learn by Abaye. And obviously Abaye took offense to the fact that he was promoting his Rebbe Rova at the expense of Abaye, in the sense that he put down Abaye in order to have Rova's shear grow, or to convince him to come to Rova's shear. Rova amar ananishate. Rova says, I was responsible for his demise. This is his Rebbe Amuvak. Kichei hava azel lebeit tebcha lemishkal umtza. When he used to go to the butcher to purchase meat, I go first. When it comes online, I get to cut the line, even in front of the messengers or the servants of Rava, because I'm greater than him. Obviously, what Rav Adar Bahava was not saying is that he was greater than Rava, because he already said that before in the story of Rav Dimi Narda, that there's a big gap between me and Rava, and he's a Talmud Muvak of Rava, and he'd never have spoken that way. He just felt that if someone was representing Rava at the butcher, then he himself should get precedence or go before that individual is representing Rava. That Rava took offense to and thought was wrong, because the person who is representing Rava at the butcher gets the same rights as Rava. If that's the case, then he should precede Rav Adar Bahava at the butcher. So obviously there was a special line or a VIP line for the Talmidei Chachamim, or the leaders of the city, and he felt that he was on that VIP line, and on that VIP line he could also jump ahead of the servants or the messengers of Rava. Nachman Yitzchak Amar Ana Nishatei. Nachman Yitzchak says, I was the cause of his demise. The Rav Nachman by Yitzchak Reish Kalo Hava. He was the individual who gave the drasha at the Kalo, the way that it's described here in the Rabbeinu Gershom is, Sheyar Ragil Lidros B'Shabbat Lifnei Achag. He was the one who gave the drasha on the Shabbat before the Yom Tov. Rav Nachman Ayer Derech Otan Shabbatot. Those Shabbatot, Rav Nachman used to give the drasha, that which means that he's the Kalo. Ko Yoma Mikami Deneo the Kalo. Every time before he gave the drasha on those Shabbatot, Marhit Bade Rav Adar Bahava Nishmatei. Bahadar Ayol the Kalo. He used to do a quick review or go over the shir with Rav Adar Bahava before he went into the Kalo. So he was his shamash in a sense, that Rav Nachman Yitzchak used to use or lean on Rav Adar Bahava to review the shir and to make sure to go through all the gemaras, that he had them all straight before he went into the shir. How Yoma, one of those times before he was going to give in the shir on the Shabbat, Doctor Papa Rav Huna Breder Rav Shua, Rav Adarbava. Rav Adarbava was on his way to Rav Nachman Yitzchak to go review the shear before he gave it. And Rav Papa and Rav Huna Breder Rav Shua stopped him on the way. Mishum de lo hava b'siyuma. They weren't there at the end. So here Rashi brings two interpretations as to what this siyum means. The one that's brought by the Rabbeinu Gershom and by Rashi means at the end of Masechet Bicholot, where it speaks about Meiser Behema, that's the last perek in Masechet Bicholot, that it was means that they weren't there for the final shear or the final perek of Bicholot when Rava gave the shear, and Rav Adarbava being his Talmud Mubok, they were willing to go or review with him what they had missed, or some suggest that they weren't there, but Eitza Kishnaser of Nachman Reish Kala, that they weren't there when they individuals had gathered together to appoint Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak to be the Reish Kala, as we see here, that he's the one who's giving the drasha. And so then they said, please tell us over what Rava said about Meiser Behema. That's why it leans more favorably towards saying this is the last parak in Bechorot, because then there's a correlation or connection between missing the Siyom and not knowing this information. On the other hand, if you say simply they weren't there when Rav Nachman Yitzchak was appointed to be the Reish Kala, either that means because they weren't there, they also missed out on the shear of Rava, what Rava said at that time, or they weren't available in the city at all, so they missed Rava's shear. He went through everything that Rava taught. He gave them over the shear that they had missed. In the interim, he then was late for helping out Rav Nachman Yitzchak before the shear on the Kala. Amrulei Rabbanan Rav Nachman Yitzchak. So Rabbanan said to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, the day is getting late. It's already past the time that you normally give the shear. Kum denagalon. Get up and give the shear, otherwise the day's going to pass, you're not going to be able to give the shear. Lama yotiv mar. Why are you sitting around and waiting, and don't you give the shear? So Amr Lahu, he said to them, yotivna v'kamintara the arse de Rav Adar Bahava. I'm sitting here and waiting for the bed. Here it means the bed, the deathbed of Rav Adar Bahava. Adohochi, in the meantime, nafa kala the nachnav shed Rav Adar Bahava. And in the meantime, that's what happened. It came out, the announcement came out that Rav Adar Bahava had passed away. So you could argue that Rav Nachman Yitzchak simply cursed him that he would pass away, although that seems like a strong reaction to him not showing up. But rather, it might be that what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was saying is that I expect Rav Adar Bahava to come. He's either going to come walking, or if he's not coming walking, that means that he already passed away, and now he's going to be coming on his deathbed. And he couldn't fathom the possibility that Rav Adar Bahava hadn't come or was delayed in any way, because, first of all, the stature of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, but also given the fact that Rav Adar Bahava had this important job of helping him to prepare for the kala, the shear that he was going to give. And given that, he couldn't believe that he wouldn't show up. And if he was tarrying, or if he was delayed, then it must be that he passed away. So Gemara concludes, Mistavrat Rav Nachman Yitzchak Anshe. Seems to make the most sense that Rav Nachman Yitzchak is the one that caused the punishment, because it was directly correlated with that story. And in that story, or at the end of that story, that's when he passes away. And therefore, the Gemara sees that as being the proximate cause to the death of Rav Adar Bar Ava. And again here, what you learn from this is twofold. One is that if someone is punished because of you, then that is not a simple thing, and you have to take responsibility for that, and then be worried that the midat hadin might come after you. Number two is, what it's showing you is that all of these situations that they quote, what Rav Adar Bar Ava did, they are disapproving of what he did. And therefore, you can learn from all of these dinim, that which Rav Adar Bar Ava did was incorrect. We already pointed that out with Rav Yosef and Rav Dimi Narda, how he treated Rav Dimi Narda was incorrect. But also on the line at the butcher store, and so on and so forth, you have to be careful when you're a person of stature, and there are expectations of you that you do the right thing, and you make the right decisions, and you can't be so strong-headed or harif, because it affects other people, and therefore you have to be careful about your actions. Okay, now we begin the next Mishnah, which is a difficult Mishnah, not inherently in reading the Mishnah here, but rather after the Gemara gives its explanation. If you look in the Perish Mishnayot of the Rambam, in his introduction to this Mishnah, he says, Perish Mishnah Zu Hi Kasha. The explanation of this Mishnah is extremely difficult. We'll point out the difficulties, and then the Gemara itself will take up these difficulties and try to explain it. It says, Misha Yakotlo Samuch Lukoto Chaveiro. Someone has a wall that is proximate to his friend's wall. Lo Yismoch Lo Kotel Acher. He shouldn't then put up another wall unless there's a 4 amot gap between the walls. So the problem in the Mishnah is the fact that it says that you already have 2 standing walls, and now it seems like you're putting up a 3rd wall that has to be 4 amot away. So the question really is, where are these walls situated? And why is there already 2 walls here, and then why you have to distance a 3rd wall? Who says you're building a 3rd wall? That's a question that the Gemara will raise and then try to answer. The next part of the Mishnah is pretty straightforward, which is hachalonot. When it comes to the windows, then ben milamalan, ben milamatan, ben kenegdan abaramot. When a person has a house with windows, and then his friend wants to put up a wall opposite those windows, there's certain rules about how far you must be away from those windows. The first rule is that, and then we're doing this according to Rashi, is that you have to distance the wall at least 4 amot away from the window so that you do not block the light that enters through that window. The second rule is that the wall must be either, as Rashi notes over here, if it's below the window, then it must be at least 4 amot below the window. If it is above the window, the height of the wall, then it must be at least 4 amot above the height of the window. That is so that if an individual stands on the wall, the average height of an individual, it's a machloket Rashi and Tosafot and Shabbat, as well as 3 or 4 amot. We'll get to that later in the Masechta. So let's assume that it's about 4 amot or a little below 4 amot. That means if your wall is lower than the window by 4 amot, then the person can't stand on the top of his wall and look into his friend's window. Or the other way around. If the wall is above the height of the window, then he can't lay on the wall or peek down through the wall into the window. So we want at least 4 amot, either that the height of the wall is above the window or below the window, so that you can't look in because of the problem of Hezek Riyash Mehezek. As we saw earlier in the Masechta, when it comes to a house, then looking into a house, there's clearly Hezek Riyah according to everyone. The Rambam over here in the Perush Mishnayot explains Milamalon and Maton to do with the placement of the windows and not the wall. Rashi reads it having to do with how high the wall is, if the wall is above or the wall is below. On the other hand, the way that the Rambam reads it is that if the windows are up high, that means milamalon, then you have to distance the wall at least 4 amot below that level. If the windows are milamatan, or below, then you have to raise the wall at least to be a height that is above 4 amot of the window. But in the end, the din is the same, which is that you need to be at least 4 amot higher or lower than the window, so an individual can't look into his friend's window, as well as 4 amot away from the wall or the window itself to allow light to enter into his house. So the Gemara here begins with a question on the Mishnah that addresses what we already pointed out in the Mishnah, which is Vekama Hechisomir. How come the first wall he was able to put closer than the requirement that we have over here? It says, Mishia Kotel Samuk to Kotel Chaveiro. The wall is already adjacent to his friend's Kotel. Then he may not put a 3rd wall unless there's 4 amot in between. But that supposes that the first wall seemingly is closer than 4 amot, has less distance there. And how did he do that? He violated the requirement of having 4 amot between the walls. So Amar Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda answers, Onchikamar, Habadi smoke, lo yismoke, alakim hirchik mimenu 4 amot. So he views the Mishnah as not being that there's an existing wall, but rather, if you're coming to put a wall in, you must put that wall more than 4 amot away from it. So the Mishnah is telling us a basic din, which is that when you put a wall parallel to your friend's wall, you must leave 4 amot between the walls. Rova is not happy with this explanation because Matkiv la Rova v'ham mishe akoto samuch do koto chaveru k'tani. That is not what is written in the Mishnah. So if that's not what's written in the Mishnah, then how can you just change it and say, oh, all of a sudden, that it means, oh, when you want to put up a wall, that's what you need to do. Even though we do have this mechanism of chasure mechsura where Amoraim reinterpret a Mishnah, over here the Rabbeinu Gershom points out, klomar, tosif ala Mishnah the taretz at yichol, aval haschemina in at yichol. If you say chasure mechsura, that there are words missing, usually it's a conjunction or a transition in the Mishnah that's missing, that's one thing to explain a Mishnah that way. But to say that words that are in the Mishnah are not meaningful, that you can't do. And that's Rova's issue with Rabbi Yehuda's explanation. And therefore, Rova offers an alternative, which is Elam HaRova HaChiktani. This is what is meant by the Mishnah. There's an existing parallel walls, which are the requisite 4 amot away from each other. Vinafal, and then it fell down. Lo yismoch lo kotel acher. Elim kein hirchik mimenu dalamot. When you go back to rebuild the wall that fell down, you must still leave the requisite 4 amot between the 2 walls. My taima. What's the reason? The davsha dehocha male dehotam. Because the compacting of the earth on this side helps the other side or helps the other wall. The girsa that we have, and the explanation that we're going to give right now, is that of Rashi. Rashi says exactly what the Gemara says, basically in the Lashon, which is that they were existing parallel walls, and the individual's wall fell down. After it fell down, he wants to come to rebuild it. You must still keep the requisite formot between the walls. The Baal Yad Tosafot already asked on this, why do you need the Mishnah to say it in that convoluted way? Why can't the Mishnah just say, you want to put up a wall, put it four amot away? What's the chiddush of saying that there was a wall there, then it fell down, and now you're putting it up again? Why does that change the din? So the Rabbeinu Tam in the Sefer Yashar answers that question and says that's the chiddush. Because we see at the end, the whole reason for this is the compacting of the earth. The space between the walls allows people to traverse there, to walk there. And when they walk there, they compact the earth, which helps to secure the integrity of the wall because the foundation is then compacted. And that is done by people walking there. So you would have thought, since the wall was already there in a way for Amot, the ground has already been compacted. And therefore you could move the wall closer at this point. The answer to that question is no, because the walking on one side helps the walking on the other side. Meaning that the ability to have people walk between the middle also, according to Rashi, helps the walls other side, the side that is not compacted, because by doing that affects both walls and secures both walls. And therefore the person wants the walls to have that gap between them so that you can walk in between and ensure the security or the integrity of the walls. That's the way that Rashi explains it, and that's the girsa that we have. On the other hand, if you look in the Rambam and the Perush of Mishnayot, the Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot, who said that this Mishnah is extremely difficult to explain, even after Rava's emendation to make it understandable, he has pictures, if you look in the Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot, but he basically says that an individual already has a wall up, and then his friend has a wall perpendicular to that. The friend who put the wall up that is perpendicular to the original wall now wants to put up another wall that is parallel to his friend's wall. So now he will basically have a area that is surrounded on three sides with one side that is open. The original wall, Reuven's wall, let's say, is on the right side. Perpendicular to that at the top is the wall of Shimon. And then parallel to Reuven's wall now on the other side and perpendicular to Shimon's wall, Shimon wants to put a second wall. And therefore you'll create walls on three sides. The Mishnah is telling you in that situation you must put four amot between Reuven's wall and Shimon's wall. And the reason that the Mishnah needs to tell you that is because originally Shimon's wall that was perpendicular to Reuven's wall did not have the requisite four amot between it. And that we'll learn in the Gemara later on that when you come into the wall on a perpendicular nature, you don't need to leave the four amot because that is too small. And that's what the Rambam says here. Unless you have a stretch of wall that is four amot long, you do not need to leave four amot between the walls. Because then the compacting over there is not so problematic because that wall only blocks off a very small space. The rest of the space is open to be used, and people will walk there, and it will be compacted. And so therefore, the din is now, when he wants to build up the parallel wall, unlike the perpendicular wall, he needs to distance it from his friend's wall for a moat. And that's what the Mishnah is describing to us, or telling us in this case. There is a third view within the Geonim, which the Yad Ramah brings down, which is that the scenario here, or the case here, is where there were two walls existing, but the existing walls were very close to each other. They did not have the requisite four amot between them, and they were parallel to each other without the four amot. The individual has that wall and now wants to put up a second wall. Does he have to distance it four amot, or can he now make it just as close as the other two walls were to each other beforehand? The Mishnah comes to tell you, you need to leave four amot. So even though the original two walls were close together and they didn't have the requisite four amot between them, nevertheless, here, when you want to put up this third wall, you need to leave four amot. And now, the understanding of the phrase in the Gemara, that davsha dehocha, mali dehautam, makes a lot of sense. Because if you leave space between the new wall and the old wall, that space of four amot, people will walk there. That'll compact the earth. But that compaction will also help the space between the two existing walls, which is not traversed because it's too narrow. And that's what it means, that walking on this side will help the integrity of the wall on the other side. So that's a third view as to what Rava's opinion is over here as to explaining the Mishnah. We saw Rashi's opinion. Now Rashi's opinion really follows the girsa here, which says, v'nafal, it fell down. Then the version of the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayot and of the Geonim, they don't have the girsa of the word nafal in there. And therefore their explanation is that the two walls exist. According to the Geonim, it's parallel walls that already exist. According to the Rambam, it's perpendicular walls that exist. And now you're going to put up a third wall. What is the din of that third wall? And the Mishnah is telling us you must distance it for Amot. The Rabbeinu Yonah over here does ask a very fundamental question, which is something that we've already seen earlier in the Masechta, which is how is it that the first person put his wall down? When the first person put his wall up, he's now going to force the other party to leave a distance of 4 amot. Why does the person who puts up the first wall have a right to do that, and then a right to demand that the other party is marchik dalet amot? So Rabbeinu Yonah brings an answer from another Rishon that suggests that the person who purchased the wall or the area of the wall purchased it from the king, and therefore he had the rights, or he got the schuyot of the king. Just like the king, when he puts up a wall, has a right to make demands that you distance it 4 amot, so too this individual also has that right. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Yonah himself, and this is very similar to what we saw in the Rashba earlier, suggests that when he puts up the wall, part of his right to put up the wall is to ensure that there is space next to it. And just like we have rules here in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to put a wall too close in order to cause darkening on the individual's house, where he already has an existing window, you don't have a right then to put up a wall to block his light, even though that impedes your ability to use your property. And same thing over here, when he puts up a wall, the fact that you have to distance it 4 amot, even though it will impede the utility of your property, that's not called nezek, and that's not called direct damage. That's a right that is granted to the individual. Given that, when he puts up the wall, he is, yes, going to cause you now have to distance 4 amot, but that's not nezek that he's causing you, that's a right that he has. And since he put his wall up first, he exercised that right, and he can maintain that right. And you don't now have a right to put up a wall that will damage his wall, because that is direct nezek, and therefore you will have to distance yourself the requisite 4 amot from that. And you can see this in the Baal HaTosfot on the bottom of Chaf Berem and Aleph. Yishamar delo asa rova lismo kala milta de migufe ate hezek. Vahoka koto enu maziklum el shagorem na ma'eta davsha. So over here where you're putting up the wall, you're not causing direct hezek. You're just causing indirect necessity to distance the other wall from that. And that utility or impingement on the friend's utility is not a problem. Or the other possible way to explain this is to assume it's a case where brothers are inheriting from a father, and therefore when they're inheriting from their father, they gain those rights. The Baal HaTosafot later on in the Sugya will give an answer along those lines, and you could possibly apply it here as well, which is that the rights over here is because it used to be a single property, and now they're splitting the property in half, and that's what garners this individual the right when he puts up the wall to impinge on the other person's property. Now, we have a qualification of this understanding of the Mishnah, which is Amar Rav. Lo shanu elo kotel gina. This is only true when you're talking about a wall in a garden. But kotel chatzer, by the kotel of a chatzer, in badi smoch somech. When it comes to a chatzer, you can put the wall even closer than 4 amot. Rabbi Yoshai Omer, echad kotel gina, vechad kotel chatzer. Whether it's a kotel of a gina or a kotel of a chatzer, if you badi smoch, enu somech, that you don't have a right to bring in closer. Am Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina velo plige. Rav and Rabbi Hoshaya's statements are not contradictory, but they rather are speaking about different issues. Ha bi'ir yishana, ha bi'ir chadasha. It depends on whether it's a new city or an old city. As Rashi notes over here, the difference between a gina and a chatzer is the number of people that are going to be walking there or moving around. When it comes to a gina, since the inside of the area that is walled off is planted, people are not going to walk there. Therefore, the walking on the outside of that wall is important for the compaction of the earth that underlies the wall. And that's why there we're going to demand that you leave 4 amot in order to have that compaction happen. On the other hand, when it comes to a kotel chatzer, where there is the chatzer on the inside is used as well as on the outside, there we're not going to demand that you leave 4 amot on the outside of the wall because there will be compaction on the inside. As the Gemara explains over here, the compaction on one side impacts the other side as well and will help to steady or give integrity to the wall. So by a chatzer, we have people walking on the inside, we were less worried about the space on the outside. Whereas by gina, where nobody is walking on the inside of the wall, we need them to walk on the outside of the wall, and therefore you need to leave the requisite distance. Therefore, what is being explained here is that the difference is between a new city and an old city. In an old city where the ground has already been compacted and there's not going to be any settling, over there, even by a chatzer, you don't have to leave the space, because of the fact that there is already compaction that's been done by individuals beforehand, plus you have the people walking on the inside, the two of those together give you enough integrity to the wall that you don't have to worry about it. In a Ir Chadasha, in a new city, whereby even in the Chatzer, there hasn't been sufficient amount of walking or compaction there we're not going to allow you to put the other wall so close, and we'll force you to distance it on the outside by 4 amot. So Rav was speaking in a city that was well-developed, already aged, and been there for a while, where compaction's already taken place. And therefore, the walking on the inside is sufficient, and the person who wants to put a wall outside the chatzer can leave less than 4 amot. In a gina, you'll still be faced with the same problem, and you always have to leave 4 amot on the outside. And Rabbi Hoshaya's statement was made in a new city, where the ground has yet to be settled and compacted, and therefore he requires both by a gina and by a chatzer that you leave the requisite 4 amot on the outside so that it can be compacted. Now the Gemara moves on to the later part of the Mishnah. It's not. Achalonot. Ben milamalon, ben milamatan, ben miknegdan arba amot. Again, this explanation of this will either be according to Rashi or the Rambam, but comes out to the same in the end, which is, you need to leave 4 amot between the wall and the window to allow light in, and then the wall either has to be 4 amot higher than the window, at the top of the wall, or the top of the wall must be more than 4 amot below the window. But Tani Allah. Now here, the Tani Allah is not your classic Tani Allah, where it's modifying the Mishnah, but rather, it seems to me it's being mosif on the Mishnah. You'll see that from the question of the Gemara afterwards, that the Gemara doesn't assume that what's written in the Mishnah applies to the Braita. And we have a Braita that says, Milamalon, Kadesh Lo Yatzitz V'Yireh. Up above is so that he doesn't look down into the window and peer in. Milamatan, down below, Shlo Yamod V'Yireh. So he doesn't stand on top of the wall and look in. Umichdedan, and opposite them, Shlo Yafil. So he doesn't cause darkness. Taima Shlo Yafil. The only reason you have to leave 4 amot between the wall and the window is so that it doesn't darken the light going into the house. Avo Mishum Dav Shlo. But it had to do with compaction on the ground in between the wall and the house. Over there, you wouldn't have to leave 4 amot. And again, this goes against what we just stated before, that Rava's explanation that you need 4 amot for compaction. It says, Achamai Skinan, Beba Minatzad. It's a case where he's coming from the side, meaning that the walls are perpendicular to each other. In a case where the walls are perpendicular to each other, then you don't need to leave the 4 amot space between them, basically because the fact that it's a very small section of the wall that goes up against the wall of the house. And therefore, if you prevent people from walking over there, it's not a big deal because on either side of the perpendicular wall, you could walk and you would compact the ground. So then why do I need to leave a distance of that shalo yafil so that the wall that is perpendicular doesn't cause darkness? Vikamo. Now the Gemara asks, how much do you have to leave? Well, what do you mean how much do you have to leave? Our Mishnah is explicit that you have to leave 4 amot. So this is where you see that the Gemara does not assume the Braita is explaining the Mishnah, but rather adding to the Mishnah, and it has its own terminology or own requirements of distance. And the Tosfot goes as far as to say that the Gemara again asks about this and says, Vatznan Harbamot, makes it sound like this question is not from the Gemara itself, but rather maybe even a self-posed question of Rav Yeva to get to the answer. Bekama, Amar Rav Yeva, Chamua de Ashin bar Nidbach Mishmei de Rav. So we have Rav Yeva, the father-in-law of Ashin bar Nidbach, the name of Rav. Kamlo Rochava Cholon, the width of the Cholon. So now the Gemara says, okay, now you've taken care of the darkening issue, which is that the Malo Rochava Cholon, that's the amount of distance you have to leave between the wall and the Cholon itself. So you have to give a square area to the Cholon, the width of the Cholon, which governs the distance that you need to have the wall away from it. Gemara says, Valo Metzitz. What about the second issue? So you've dealt with the light issue. What about the fact that you have a hezek ri'iyah issue, is that the person can peer in? Amrav Zvid, madir et kotlo. It's in a case where he tapers the wall. So here again, the Rishonim give all sorts of different answers, explanations of what tapering is. Rashi simply says that the top of the wall is on an angle by which he can't stand on it. He can't stay on top of the wall. So it comes down on the top angle on an angle by which you can't lay on it to peer in, or you can't stand on it to look in. And therefore, there's no ability to look in. Now, in this case, the problem of mitzitz is different than we had in the other walls. When the wall was parallel to the wall of the house, then the problem was directly opposite the window. Can you stand on this wall and peer in, or can you sit on this wall and peer down into the window? So therefore, height would make the difference. Over here by the wall that is perpendicular to the window, we have a bigger problem, because you can peer into the window not only at the end of the wall that is right by the window, but if you back down the wall, further down the wall, then actually might make it easier for you to peer in the window, even if it's not at the same height as the window. And therefore, up 4 amot or down 4 amot may not solve your problem over here because of the fact that you can peer in even if it's higher or lower because you're more distant from the window. And therefore, if you go to the end of the wall that's far away from the window, you could peer into the window even if it was above 4 amot or below 4 amot. And therefore, you need the solution of the tapering of the wall so you can't sit on the wall whatsoever. The question amongst the Rishonim, again here, there are differing opinions as to whether you need both the tapering and 4 amot above or 4 amot below, or According to many of the Rishonim, the tapering itself is sufficient to prevent the individual from looking in, and therefore we don't care if it's four amot above or below, because the top of the wall is just not a place that a person can stay on. Amar says, Vanantnan, doesn't our Mishnah say arba amot? What do you mean, doesn't our Mishnah say arba amot? This is what the Tosfot points out. Didn't you just ask how far it is, or how much space it is? And the Gemara gives an answer from Rav Yeva. And now it asks, what about the four amot? So here it seems to me that this is disconnected from the previous conversation in the Gemara, and that's what Tosfot is pointing out. It says, Lokasha, kan miruach achat, kan mishtei ruchot. That's whether it's coming from one side, or whether it's coming from two sides. So as Rashi notes over here, it's a question of if you have one wall that's going perpendicular to this window or wall of your friend's house, or do you have two walls that are perpendicular to your friend's wall? If it's one wall that is perpendicular, then we don't need the four amot. You simply need the tapering to ensure that the person can't stand on top of the wall or sit on top of the wall. Then if you have two walls that are parallel to each other, that are perpendicular to the window, in that case, you have to give space for the window to get light, because otherwise they're going to cut off the light from both sides of the window. And that requirement is the four amot. The way that the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayot explains it is that you have to have four amot between the two walls, which means that they are two amot each away from the middle of the window. So sach hakol, the totality is that you have to have four amot between the two walls, which will give you two amot to each wall away from the center of the window. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim that say that the four amot means each wall must be four amot away from the window, meaning distance to the side of the window. And you can see that in the Beinu Gershom, Ve'elu bet kodolim mafilim harbe. Since you have two walls, they cause a lot of darkness. Each koto must be four amot away from the window. So in a case where you have two walls, you have to leave each wall four amot away from the window to allow sufficient light to come in the window. When you only have one wall, which means that the light can come in from the other side, there you only have to use k'melo ruchava chalon. The width of the window is the amount of space that you have to leave before you put up the wall that is perpendicular to this wall. And again, we saw again the Perush Mishnayot of the Rambam that says you need a totality of four between the walls, not each wall having four amot away. Tashma, v'etakotel mena mazchila. You have to leave the wall away from the gutter, dalet amot, four amot, kedei she'ei zokei fetasulam, in order that he can put up a ladder. Taima mishum shulam. The only reason is that he needs to put up a ladder. Aval mishum dav shelo. But for the compacting of the earth below, we don't worry about it. So once again here, this is a question on Rova's explanation, which is that when you have a house that has a gutter on top, you have to leave sufficient space so that the individual can lean his ladder against the wall, climb up, and then clear out the gutters that are up above. So in that case, again, we're requiring four amot. When you put up a wall parallel to the wall of this person's house, we're requiring that you distance it four amot. But the requirement derives not from the fact that you have to compact the ground in between, but simply from the fact that you need to be able to get up to the gutters above with the ladder. If that's the case, it's once again a question on Rava. What exactly the circumstances are here, we'll see in the answer, which is a machloki between Rashi and others have had to explain this Gemara. It says, Achim Haskinin Baskila Mishupat, dealing with, according to Rashi, a roof that is on an angle, on a slant. Dimishum Dab Shahu Ka'azu Ba'ati Tute. He can go underneath it. So you think of the modern day houses where you have these roofs that are on a slant. The slanted roofs don't end exactly at the wall that is below them. They actually extend a little bit beyond the wall that is holding up the roof. And they have what's called a soffit over there, an empty space that sits between the roof, which extends beyond the wall of the house. And then there are the gutters. And so as Rashi notes over here, the roof itself extends beyond the wall. And so if you're talking about the amount of distance you have to put for Davsha, we're not worried about that, because the gutters themselves and the roof itself extends out over four amot, and people can walk under that area of the roof. That will deal with the compaction of the ground underneath to secure the wall of the house, and he already gets the four amot from that. What we're worried about now is the ability to get up to the gutters and lean the ladder against the gutter and have space. And so he needs to leave four amot for him to be able to get up the ladder to the gutters. And that's a different measurement. That's a measurement from the gutters, not a measurement from the wall of the house. And that's why the Gemara here is focused, or the Braita is focused on the distance from the gutter, and not the distance from the wall of the house. And that's why it doesn't speak about Davsha. That's Rashi's explanation. Another thing they quote from their Rabbeinu Hananel, it's the gutter itself that is distancing between the wall and the other wall. That's why the requirement of 4 amot from the end of the gutter is not what you would need for compaction. For compaction, you'd only need 4 amot away from the wall of the house. The gutter overhangs the house. And therefore, when you're saying you need 4 amot away from the gutter, that's not because of compaction. That's only because of the ladder or the ability to access above with the ladder. Therefore, because it has to do with the issue of davsha, you can walk under the gutter. According to Rabbeinu Chananel, according to Rashi, you can walk over the overhang of the roof that extends beyond the wall. All right, now we begin the next Mishnah, which says, person has to distance the ladder from the shovach, which is a dovecote or a birdhouse of his friend. So if there's a wall running between them, and the individual puts a ladder up against his wall, and on the opposite side of the wall, there is this dovecote or bird's nesting area that his friend keeps. If he was to leave the ladder exactly opposite the birdhouse, then animals can go up that, so that the weasel or a mongoose or some sort of rodent doesn't climb up the ladder and then jump into the dovecote or birdhouse and eat up all the birds. You can't put the ladder there. But you must be marchik dalet amot. You must move it either to the right or to the left for amot, so that the animal doesn't have the ability to climb the ladder and then get to the birdhouse. This is what we just quoted in the previous Gemara, that you have to put the wall away from the gutter, dalet amot, so that you're able to put up a ladder. And over here, you have the same question is, just because you have a gutter, what gives you the right to push your friend's wall back for amot? Over here, Tosafot discusses a possibility where they'd split the chatzer, they'd split the property, and then they ended up with those rights because of the way that they split the property. Since the Mazikila was already there, he gained those rights. So again, you have the same question that we spoke about before in the Rabbeinu Yonah. Why do you have these rights? Is it because these are not direct nezek, but rather just impinging on the utility of your friend's property? But if he was to do the same or put something up, then he would be doing direct nezek, and that's why it's not permitted. Do we say these are brothers that are splitting an existing property? Or is this a right that you bought because either the king had it beforehand or someone sold you that right? And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom, Shemiyesh Tachaviro Chazaka Bechaz Tzeiro, that he has an existing chazaka to pour the waters out of his gutter into his friend's chatzer. So there is already an existing framework which allows the gutter to be there, and that's what demands or gives him the right to ask for it to be the wall that's built to be 4 amot away. And that's why we're trying to determine what is the nature of that right that you purchase. But it says, Lema matznitzin delok Rabbi Yossi. Let us suggest our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yossi, who's going to appear later on in our Perek and Chavhei, Chavav, Machloka between him and the Chachamim, as to upon whom is the obligation to avoid Nezek. Is the obligation on the Mazik, the one who's doing the damage, or on Izak, the one being damaged? And it sees from later on in the Perek that Rabbi Yossi, and we saw this already earlier a little bit as well, Rabbi Yossi believes al nizak. It's the one who's being damaged that has to do the harchaka. So from our Mishnah, it makes it sound like over here that the person doing the damage is the one who has to make the distancing and not the one being damaged that has to take the precautions. So now, either Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi says, Amar zechufer b'toch shalev, zonoteya b'toch shalo. You can do whatever you want inside of your property, and the other guy can do whatever he wants inside of his property, and it doesn't matter that one will damage the other eventually, because as long as you stay within your own property, that is fine. The case there is talking about putting a boar in your property, another guy planting a tree in his property, that the tree, eventually the roots of the tree will then eat into the boar. He doesn't have to worry about it, because at the time that he planted the tree, the roots weren't there, and he doesn't have to anticipate in the future that the roots will affect the boar of his friend, because when he did it, he was permitted, and he's doing it inside of his own property, and that is permitted. Over here, we're not saying that. We're saying that your rights now impinge on your neighbor's rights to put up a wall, how close he can put up a wall, and it seems that over here, the person who would be damaged by whatever happens afterwards gets those rights, and he can stop the mazik, quote-unquote, from doing that. So that it goes against Rabbi Yossi's position. From this, many of the Rishonim conclude that the Mishnayot until now in the parak also were not like Rabbi Yossi, because all the Mishnayot until now that granted rights to individuals also would be the same. The question then is, why do they only ask it over here? For that reason, other Rishonim believe that it's only in this case in particular where it's not like Rabbi Yossi, but in the other cases earlier in the Perek, we could make it fit like Rabbi Yossi because of the answer that the Gemara gives over here. So the way Rashi explains it is that many of the things, or many of the Mishnah in this Perek don't fit with Rabbi Yossi, and they asked over here in regards to this Mishnah because they were uncertain as to whether Rabbi Yossi could fit into this Mishnah or not. And then the Gemara decides that yes, Rabbi Yossi can fit into this Mishnah. the Bali and Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim see it the other way around, which is that the remainder of the parak wasn't a question because those are all gire delay. Whereas over here, we're talking about a case which we don't know if it's gire delay. And that's what the Gemara concludes, that it is also gire delay over here. And Rabbi Yossi can even fit into this Mishnah like he fit into the previous Mishnayot in the parak. Afilu tema Rabbi Yossi, even according to Rabbi Yossi, he can fit in here. Ha Amar Vashi, Kavina Bei Rav Kahana, because Ravashi says when we are by the Beit Medrash of Rav Kahana, of Amar, Mode Rabbi Yossi Begiri Didei. Rabbi Yossi agrees when you are shooting arrows that that can't be considered to be usage of your property that is okay, even though it's going to damage your friend. Meaning if there's direct damage from what you are doing to your friend, then we do not allow you to do this. Hachanami, so too in our case here in this Mishnah, it's Zimnin de Bahadi de Manachle, Yatva Bechor Bekafza. Because sometimes when you put the ladder down, the weasel or the mongoose is waiting right there. And as you put the ladder there, it climbs the ladder, jumps up and goes into the dovecote or the birdhouse and does the damage. So you're directly facilitating the damage. There's no delay between what you do and the damage that happens. And it's considered to be gire delay. My says, Vaha Gromahu? Wait a minute. That's Groma. And Groma Benizikin is Patur. So Amar Tuvi Bar Matna, Zoto Merit. From this you would conclude, Groma Benizikin is Asur. That Groma Benizikin is not allowed. So now, the conclusion of this, according to Rashi, is that we have a machloket in the Gemara Baba Kama as to whether we are Dan Dine De Garmi. When there is something where you have a close connection between what you have done and the nesek that happens, even though it's not direct, nevertheless, you are Chayav according to one opinion, Patur according to the other opinion. What Rashi says, the Gemara is saying over here is, even according to the one who says you are patur by Dine de Garmi, he still thinks it's asur. And that's what's meant over here. Even though the Gemara uses the term groma, basically Rashi is conflating the two terms and says that when it says here, groma is asur, it means that even according to the one who says that Garmi is patur, he still thinks it's asur. It's patur of asur. On the other hand, most of the Mishonim, you can see this in the Bali HaTosafot, think that this has nothing to do with the issue of whether you think you're chayav or patur in Dine de Garmi. This is a basic statement, which is that even though by groma, which is a more distant type of causation or causal effect from what you've done to the nezek, nevertheless, even though you are patur in all of those cases, it is patur of al asur. This goes back to something that we discussed in our introduction to Baba Kama, which is there an iser in the Torah to cause nezek? One of the items that might be evidence to the fact that there might be an Isur of Nezek comes from here, which is even though you're patur by Grama, there's still an Isur to be the Goreim of Nezek. And that shows or seems to imply that there is an Isur of causing Nezek independent of your culpability or liability for the Nezek that is caused. But then Tosfah goes on. We actually spoke about this at the end of Baba Kama, which is what is then the fundamental difference between Grama and Garmi. And over here, Tosafot lays out some distinctions to be made. It says, "V'chilek Rabbeinu Yitzchak l'shon achad dina de garmi chayav shvinisho sehu atzmo hezek l'mamon chaveiro." Case of garmi versus groma is a case where you, the person, are the causal effect of the damage. It's not your mamon that causes it. It's not groma through your property or through your possessions that causes the damage, even though it's indirect. Here it's an indirect cause, but it derives directly from you. Vod chilek, and he makes a second distinction, is the dina de garmi de chayav hanu mishat maaseh sheba hezek. The second thing that differentiates garmi from groma is the immediacy of the damage that happens. By garmi, the hezek happens immediately after you take your action. The immediate causal effect is the damage happens. On the other hand, groma involves some sort of delay or space of time between the action that you took and the damage that is caused. In that way, Tosafot differentiates between Garmi and Groma, or another distinction brought by the Rishonim is the fact that his action either causes, directly leads to the damage, even though it's not immediate or direct. Whereas in the case of Groma, it's a case where he facilitates the ability for the Nezek to take place in the future. And that would be the difference again between Groma and Garmi. But then it says our Gemara over here, when it says that your Groma is a sur, it's speaking about Groma, not the issues of Garmi. They're totally different issues, and whether you're chayav and patur in garmi is independent of the statements of the Gemara here with regards to groma. On the other hand, Rashi sees the two as being the same, and therefore when he says, we're speaking about garmi and groma over here, he says, well, the one who says you're patur by garmi, oh, will say that you are still asur because of groma. And therefore he uses the term groma here to mean garmi, whereas Tosafot and the other Rishonim differentiate. And therefore, the explanation here about the Mishnah, both by the case of the ladder, as well as putting the wall adjacent to the other wall, over there, you're causing, according to the Balei Tosafot, immediate damage. Immediate damage either because the animal now got access immediately to do the damage that was there, and it was your action that did it, or your building of the wall again immediately stopped people's ability to traverse that area and do the compaction that was needed. And therefore, you have direct nezik that is being caused. Again, it's still not direct in the sense that you'd be chayav for it, but it's direct enough in the sense to be considered that it's gire delay, and that will make the responsibility on you to remove that or to prevent that damage from happening. Okay, we're going to stop over here on the last line of Chavbet Amudbet.